Hello, this is Ellen Thurston, and I'm here in Studio B today with Carol Russoff to talk about a program she's going to be doing at the Hudson Opera House. What date is it going to be, Carol?
It's May 28th at the Hudson Opera House West Room, and that's a Sunday afternoon of Memorial Weekend. That's the good news and the bad news, that it's Memorial Weekend, and it is a free performance.
Just to give a little background to Carol Russoff, she has been for a couple of years working with a teen theater group at the Opera House, and then this summer she's going to be doing the same at the Hudson Area Library. And she has done absolute wonders with these teenage kids. And Carol, can you just briefly tell us how you why you started to work with teenagers in theater?
We're talking about the teenage?
No, we're going
talking
to be
talking about Bintel.
We're going to be talking about Bintel,
okay.
But
a couple years ago. It was 14 years ago. Unbelievable.
Really?
Yeah. And I just walked into the Opera House when it was a funkier place and asked the kind Gary if I could teach theater to kids, because I love teenagers. And he was the most welcoming person in that regard. He just said, yes, let's apply for grants, let's do it, go ahead, here's the room, here's the heat, here's the AC, and have a good time. And he has been, if I ever had a boss, and he's not really a boss, but I think Gary has been the best boss I've ever had in my life. Because he gave me freedom and he left me alone. What could be a better boss?
Well, aside from your work with teens, what else have you done in the theater? Are you an actress or are you a director?
I was an actor for a long time until I discovered in myself that a director or a casting person saying yes or no to me made or unmade my day. I was too thin-skinned to be a person who went for auditions. And I always liked imagining how I thought theater should be, how I thought a moment should be perceived and expressed. So directing was much more up my alley. And then I moved to England and I needed a job. So I began teaching. And it turned out that I adored teaching, and teenagers were my favorite age group.
Wow, not many people say that about teenagers.
I know.
Well, that gives us some background on your move now to do this project at the Opera House on the 28th. So can you tell us how you got to this material and what you're planning?
My late husband had an abiding and passionate engagement with his Jewish immigrant legacy. When he was brought up in Brooklyn in the late 30s, he didn't speak English. He didn't even know he was in America. He spoke Yiddish and Russian. And his experiences and his memories were very poignant to me. And then by accident and happen chance, I came across this amazing collection of letters to the Jewish Daily Forward, which were written only in Yiddish, because it was the native tongue of all the immigrants on the Lower East Side in the first part of the last century. So this gorgeous, wonderful, varied and fascinating, sincere letters were anthologized in this Bintel brief, which in Yiddish means a bundle of letters. And I started reading it and thinking, what a wonderful vehicle for readers' theater that would be. So I imagined and imagined and imagined, and then I brought it to fruition with the kind support of the Wasserman Streit Yadea Memorial Fund through the Berkshire Taconic Community Foundation. My application for a change was only a half page long, and it was a sincere and simple application, and they gave me a simple and sincere grant.
Good for you.
So that was fun to have it be easy for a change. And so we were off and running, and there are wonderful, wonderful actors in our county. And so I have four men and four women of varying ages and backgrounds, some of them Jewish, some of them not. And it's not important that they would be Jewish because, one, they're actors and they slip into other skins. And two, the reason this stuff is so beautiful is because of its universality, not because of its specificity about Jews. So, and that particular immigrant experience.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. I remember going to see the Prairie Home Companion with Garrison Keillor at Town Hall in New York. Mm-hmm. And some friends and I went, and a couple of us were Jewish. I'm not Jewish, but two of my friends were. And somebody remarked on how the material was so universal, because Garrison Keillor told this long story about washing the dishes with his mother and the things his mother would say to him. And it could have been my mother or your mother, you know. So
exactly. That's just exactly that. If it's true in the specific, mm-hmm. then it reminds us that it's true in the universal, too, because we all share the human experience.
Right.
Yeah.
Can I just ask you about the Jewish Forward? The Daily Forward?
Can I read a little bit that I put in the program?
Yeah, sure.
Because then it'll be much more, my writing is better than my speaking, so I can read what I wrote.
I just wonder if the newspaper was a New York paper or whether it was national.
It was very specifically Lower East Side,
right,
in Yiddish, because it was in another language, a very narrow language, although a very beautiful language. Only people who spoke Yiddish read it. So it was very particular to that, the Lower East Side,
right,
of Brooklyn at the beginning of the last century.
Mm-hmm.
So should I read this?
Sure.
For more than 80 years, the Jewish Daily Forward, legendary advice column, a bintel brief, which means in Yiddish, a bundle of letters, dispensed shrewd, practical, and fair-minded advice to its readers. Created in 1906 to help bewildered Eastern European Jewish immigrants learn about their new country, the column also gave them a forum for seeking advice and support in the face of problems and challenges ranging from wrenching spiritual dilemmas to family squabbles. Predicaments when old world meets new. And then I talk about the way I'm going to stage it, and then I have a clarinet musical accompaniment to it. And it really expresses, I hope it'll bring to life the history and the humor and the struggle of the Jewish immigrant experience. But it's very relevant that it's an immigrant experience, and we are mm-hmm. I'm sure the immigrant experience is always relevant, but now it's also political and relevant. So
right.
It's a good reminder of our necessary empathy with the immigrant experience.
Well, so these letters are going to be read on stage by actors.
Right.
Was this column like Dear Abby, the Dear Abby of its day?
I suppose you would call it the Dear Abby. Yes. 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 It involves itself a little bit more socially and culturally.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people who wrote Dear Abby were people with problems. And these are people who have problems about being in a new country.
Uh-huh.
And new mores and new habits, just a new culture.
Right.
So it has a lot to do where old meets new.
Excuse me. So you're not looking for actors at this point.
No,
you just called on.
I called on people I knew.
Yeah,
and
good for
been,
you.
They've been, the process, rather than my choosing the letters, we had several rehearsals where I asked the actors to choose letters which spoke to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fascinating. That was just fascinating. That was a process of discovery that I didn't expect. And our discussions about why do we want to read this letter, you know, and do we want three letters about different situations of a person who wants to marry a Gentile? No, we just want one letter, even though they might be terrific,
yeah,
emotive right. and evocative letters.
Right.
So we wanted to choose beautifully expressed letters, but also letters that covered a gamut of problems.
Oh, I think it's wonderful that you involved the actors in that process yeah. of choosing.
And that was so interesting to me because we're doing one about vegetarianism then. And because a woman is saying she's shocked and horrified that her sons are vegetarians. And the advice at that time was from the shrewd and educated editor. He said, take them to a doctor. That vegetarianism was thought of as being a aberration of some kind at the time.
Oh, so you took it, you let the doctor tell him that this is bad for him?
Right. The editor said, go to the doctor, because it's true and very strange that your sons being vegetarians is a real problem. They should be eating meat.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm really looking forward to this program.
I can read a couple of the
oh, that would be
letters
great.
If you want.
That would be wonderful. I'm just looking here to see. I think this collection of letters was somehow in the Smithsonian or some digital collection, an archive of some sort. But I don't see it here now, so.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I didn't know that. And well, it should be. You know, they don't have it at the Tenement Museum, which is interesting.
Well, you're reading from a book called
Brintle Brief. This is the book that I'm talking about from which we've selected
right.
entries. So I'm just going to read a couple of them. This one
okay.
is from 1908. Our selection started in 1906, so this is an early one, and I'm actually choosing these because they're short.
Okay.
And this one happens to be, when we're going to do this, this is going to be read by Peter Medici, who's an old student of mine, and it's about a young man. So I'm lucky that I have a young man in the cast so he can read a young man doing a young man. But now I'm an old woman doing a young man. So here we go. This is 1908. Dear editor, I ask you to give me some advice in my situation. I am a young man of 25, 16 years in America, and I recently met a fine girl. She has a flaw, however, that keeps me from marrying her. The fault is that she has a dimple in her chin, and it is said that people who have this lose their first husband or wife. At first I laughed at the idea, but later it began to bother me. I began to observe people with dimpled chins and found out that their first husbands or wives really had died prematurely. I got so interested in this that whenever I see someone with this defect, I ask about it immediately. And I find out that some of the men have lost their first wives, and some of the women's first husbands are dead. This upset me so that I don't know what to do. I can't leave my sweetheart. I love her very much. But I'm afraid to marry her lest I die because of the dimple. I've questioned many people. Some say it's true, others laugh at the idea. Perhaps you too will laugh at me for being such a fool and believing such nonsense, but I cannot rest until I hear your opinion about it. I want to add that my sweetheart knows nothing about this. Respectfully, the unhappy fool. And the editor writes back, the tragedy is not that the girl has a dimple in her chin, but that some people have a screw loose in their heads. One would need the knowledge of a genius to explain how a dimple in the chin could drive a husband or wife to the grave. Does the angel of death sit hiding in the dimple? It seemed to us that it is a beauty spot, and we never imagined it could house the devil. It's tragic humor to find such superstition in the world today. It's truly shameful that a young man who was brought up in America should ask such questions. To calm him, we wish to tell him we know many people with such dimples who have not lost their first husbands or wives, but live out their years together in great happiness.
Oh, so that's charming.
That's very much an old world meets new, because hopefully, mostly, I think, we're free of old world superstitions. Or are we? I don't know. You know, maybe it's bad luck to turn off your cell phone in the bathroom. I don't know.
My grandmother had lots of superstitions.
Yeah, and so I'm a Hungarian, and my grandma told me not to go to sleep with the curtains open because the moon would magnetize me out of bed and pull me up. And
wow.
But we're from Dracula country. There was lots of that stuff.
Well, my grandmother was just more practical than that, I guess. I don't know. She didn't like throw salt over her shoulder or anything quite like that.
Uh-huh.
But also she had wonderful stories about the wind. She hated the wind. And I find that I'm not fond of the wind either.
And you know, if it goes back to mythologizing some of this, I love it, because behind this, what may seem a simple superstition, is really some great stories, like, you know, where the wind is born and what he's doing when he blows. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, it's really good stuff. So I have another letter. Should I read another one?
Oh, yeah.
And then I haven't marked any other ones. This is 1920, so it's 16 years later. Here we are in the flapper days of 1920, but we're still on the Lower East Side. This is a woman. Dear editor, I write you this letter because I want to hear your opinion about the behavior of a woman I am acquainted with, who belongs to progressive groups and considers herself a radical. Not long ago, the couple invited me to their home, and I spent a pleasant evening with them. When the time came to eat supper, everyone went into the dining room to sit down at the table, and the poor woman who works for them ate in the kitchen. Since I know the couple, and I know they consider themselves radical people and free thinkers, I wondered why the servant didn't eat at the table along with everyone. I took the liberty of telling my friend that she ought to ask the woman in to eat with us at the dining room, because it wasn't right for her to sit alone in the kitchen. Then my friend answered me that it has to be this way, that the woman who works for them must eat separately. For me, this was not the right answer, and it seems that one of us does not understand the meaning of ethics and morals of the socialist standpoint. Therefore, I ask you to explain to us with which one is right. And with socialistic regards, a reader. Answer. We are in agreement with the writer and not with her friend. Progressive people should not discriminate between the servant and the members of the family. When everyone eats in the dining room and the maid is left sitting in the kitchen, they are wronging her because this is degrading. So that was from 1920, and I guess no one took up on that.
Hmm.
People who serve are separate. They don't serve and then sit down with us normally.
Right.
That's too bad.
I see what you say. I still think this is connected to the Smithsonian, and I can't seem to find it in the press release. But
well, maybe it was cataloged by the Smithsonian.
Yeah, that's true.
As a keeper.
Yeah.
You know.
But this is going to be a wonderful evening, I can tell.
I hope so. And there's refreshments afterwards.
Hey.
Yeah. And discussion, and some rabbis are coming. And
oh, wonderful.
It'll be interesting.
Yes, it will.
Yeah.
And that's on the 28th.
Sunday the 28th in the West Room at the Hudson Opera House at 3 p.m. in the afternoon.
And to make a reservation, sounds to me like you should.
I think you should. You should call the Opera House.
822-1438.
Yeah, and just say I want to make reservations for a Bintel brief.
Right.
Bintel
brief. She's been coaching me.
Yes.
And you know, I lived in New York for quite a while, so I thought I had an accent, but maybe not. I still have my upstate accent,
I'm afraid. I'll help you become a Jewish immigrant.
You're going to help me.
Yeah. There you go. You're going to help me.
But don't hock me a Chinook, whatever you do.
Very good.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Ellen. You're wonderful.
We've been talking to Carol Russoff, who's the director of a program at the Opera House on May 28th. And we look forward to seeing it and to hearing it and to many more in the future.